This is not the time to cast a jocular or feel-good vote.
Don't worry, Governor. I don't think anyone feels good this year.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast, 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI News Radio. In Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM, the Green Renaissance Network. In Palinville, New York on WLPP 102.9 FM. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950. KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We are also streaming coast to coast and around the globe on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, amongst others, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us again today as we are just a little bit over, about a week and a half from Election Day, when I would love to say that this long national nightmare will finally be over, but it may just be beginning on that day, I'm sorry to say. We will get to the latest election madness soon. We've got a lot of news today as Americans continue their fight to vote. And it really is a fight to vote. You thought you had the right to vote? Well, you still apparently in this nation have to fight to vote. So we'll have a lot of news on that and some news on Americans fighting to keep other Americans from being able to vote at all. But first, up in North Dakota, the attempt to stop the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline continues. We covered this quite a bit a few months ago now.
We've been following it all along as it has erupted.
And it has been going on, even with all of the noise, energy being sucked out of the room by the election. The folks at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation up in North Dakota have been continuing their protest, expanding their protest of this 1,200-mile-long pipeline that is being constructed along what they say is their sacred lands, right near their tribal lands, near their water supplies. And it's beginning to turn even uglier now. Today, with reports that armed soldiers and law enforcement have been dressing in riot gear today, arresting protesters who had set up camp on private land, attempting to block the construction of the pipeline on those private lands. Law enforcement officers and soldiers driving trucks, military Humvees and buses started at midday today and formed a horseshoe-like loop, according to AP, around the protesters once they reached the camp. 200 protesters were awaiting them, some defiant and others praying. And, well, then the fun began, did it not, Desi Doyen? I know you've been keeping your eye on this story throughout the day.
Yes, we've been following this quite a bit. You know, the police, the governor, Jack Dalrymple, mm-hmm. governor of North Dakota, had called in out-of-state police from Nebraska and other areas and his own National Guard. He has declared a state of emergency over this particular protest, you know, because they're blocking roads or they're impeding access. So he does
state of emergency. Hurry, we've got got to build this pipeline.
We've got people who are unarmed protesting stuff. So, you know, just to be clear about what we're talking about, there are three different camps. There's the Sacred Stone camp, the Ossetti Skowin camp, and the North or Forward camp. It's the North or Forward camp that is on private land and is right now in the path of the pipeline. That is the area where all of this confrontation happened today. So basically, the police approached with, they had MRAPs, those are those big army tank thingies.
Mm-hmm.
They had a sound cannon, which they, you know, an that long-range audio
those
device.
LRADs that make a whole bunch of noise.
They're really loud and can damage your hearing. They had armored trucks. They had a bulldozer. The protesters had put up hay bales and some cars that they had disabled across the road. So they did block an actual public access road. And that, you know, is illegal to do so. So what the police...
And I understand they actually punctured their own tires.
Is that true? That's been reported. Have not seen that confirmed, but it is possible.
Their own tires.
Not
their, somebody else's, but their own to make it harder to move those cars
out
of the way and so
forth. Hay bales were set on fire. Unclear whether they were set on fire by police or by the protesters. Mm. The standoff appears to have ebbed for now. It seems to be over for now. That's according to Caroline Gruskin of the Bismarck Tribune. She's on scene right now. And she described that the police were using pepper spray. They were using rubber bullets. They were pushing the crowds back. Now, some of the protesters that were at the resistance line where the blockade was, she reported having some conflict among themselves about whether they should peacefully move back or if they should stand and fight. What they essentially did is that they have moved back, but the police have moved into the Forward or North camp and have been dismantling tents and spraying people with mace and arresting people.
There was division amongst the protesters early on in this protest. We had the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, David Archambault, on this show a few weeks back. There was sort of a division between some protesters who basically wanted a very peaceful Occupy protest where they just, you know, stayed in place and were more a nuisance. Then there was other protesters who were more, I don't want to say aggressive, maybe aggressive is the right word. Not that they wanted to be
in overt civil disobedience.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Not violence per se, and so I suspect it sounds like those are the protesters who have moved. I mean, because this is private. The big camp is on
Army Corps land.
Public land.
So.
But this is on specifically on privately owned land that's owned by the pipeline company, as I understand.
Yes, and here's some explanation from Jacqueline Keener. She's mm-hmm. on Twitter. She's a Native American journalist. She kind of explained the legal rationale behind why they decided to establish the North or Forward camp on this private land and across this river, the road. She said that the Cannonball Ranch, which is what we're talking about, was bought by the Dakota Access Pipeline owners. That's the company Energy Transfer Partners. Mm-hmm. North Dakota is investigating the purchase of that land because it apparently violates a Depression-era law that outlaws the purchase of any agricultural land by a corporation that is not family-owned. So that land also falls within unceded treaty territory lands that were agreed to by the Great Sioux Nation in 1851. And so there might be some legal standing under international law for that to be considered illegally occupied land by the state of North Dakota.
By the state of North Dakota or by the Energy Transfer Partners, the company
at this
itself?
Point that the land itself was never properly sold into private hands.
Therefore,
it would never have been.
Related to all of this, and this will all get worked out after November 8th, after President Trump comes into office in January.
And decides to uphold civil disobedience
and
the right to protest.
That's right. No, he will end this because, in fact, financial disclosures, AP is reporting, show that the Republican presidential candidate, Donald Trump, actually holds stock in the company that is building the Dakota Access Pipeline. Trump's 2016 federal disclosure forms that were filed back in May, and they show that he owned between $15,000 and $50,000 in stock in the Texas-based company Energy Transfer Partners. That he used to own actually more. That's down from half a million, 500,000 and between 500,000 and 1 million a year earlier. So he sold some of that stock, but he also holds between 100,000 and 250,000 in Phillips 66 stock, which has a 1/4 share of Dakota Access. Now, we've been reporting on the Green News Report and so forth. Donald Trump loves pipelines. He wants more and more pipelines of any type. He never saw a pipeline he didn't love, including the Keystone XL pipeline he wants to bring back. Well, campaign contribution disclosures now show that Energy Transfer Partners, again, that's the company who owns this Dakota Access Pipeline, their CEO, Kelsey Warren, donated $3,000 to Trump's campaign, plus, which is the max, directly to a campaign. Plus, he also donated $100,000 to a committee supporting Trump's candidacy, a super PAC, and he gave $66,800 to the Republican National Committee. So these were Trump's stake in the pipeline itself, and those donations from the owners of the pipeline. Those were first reported this week by The Guardian. So Donald Trump has a stake in this pipeline, and now you know. All right, we'll have Desi. You'll be back with some more green news. We've got our latest green news report coming up.
And some positive news.
Yeah, really? You sure?
I don't know. I hope. Crossing my fingers.
Yeah, because it won't be positive through then. We've got quite a few. I don't know if they're not necessarily positive, but they are disturbing issues going on with our elections, and they are facts, and they need to be talked about, and they are at least as important as what crazy thing did Donald Trump say today. Now, there is a reason, as Greg Sargent at Washington Post points out, that Trump keeps claiming that there is rampant voter fraud going on. And this, you know, that if he loses in any event, this will be because of a rigged election. The reason he keeps saying this is because, well, Republican voters are inclined to believe him. A new poll out from Public Religion Research Institute this week finds that a huge majority of Republican respondents say voter fraud is a bigger problem than restricting access to voting. And there is a striking racial divide in this poll as well on that question. The poll finds that among Americans overall, only 43% have a great deal of confidence that their votes will be counted accurately. You got that? Only 43% feel their votes will be counted accurately. That alone, that statistic alone to me is alarming, is troubling, and frankly is why I've been warning for so many years, more than a decade now, about our voting system, about our voting machines, and about the lack of confidence that they bring to the entire process, and that alone is a grave threat to democracy. Well, we are seeing that now. In spades. Meanwhile, the partisan divide here is notable as well. 55% of Democrats have a great deal of confidence in the vote counting. Now, you might think that sounds good. It's a majority of Democrats. But really, only 55% of Democrats have a great deal of confidence in the vote counting? I'd be alarmed by that. I am alarmed by that. I'm also alarmed that just 44% of Republicans have a great deal of confidence in the vote counting, and just 41% of Trump supporters feel the same way. But all of this gets worse. According to this PRRI survey, roughly 2/3, that's 66% of Republicans, believe voter fraud is a bigger problem than voter disenfranchisement, compared to just 19% of Democrats. So at least Democrats have that one right. But 2/3 of Republicans think voter fraud is the big concern. Never mind, purging voters, millions of voters from the rolls. Never mind the photo ID restrictions that keep people from voting. Never mind the restrictions on early voting and so forth. 66% say voter fraud, which is almost non-existent. Certainly at the polling place, it's almost non-existent. 66% of Republicans thinks that's the bigger problem. The racial divide here is also disturbing. According to the numbers from PRRI, African Americans say that denial of access to eligible voting is the bigger problem. bigger than voter fraud by huge margins, 66 to 21. Among African Americans, whites say voter fraud is the bigger problem by 42 to 35. So more whites think voter fraud is the problem. Republicans, voters overwhelmingly, of course, think voter fraud is the bigger problem. And that, of course, is thanks in no small part to the voter fraud canard that Trump has been putting out there. But more disturbingly, Republicans have been putting this out for years and years now in an effort to restrict voting. So that hardly started with Donald Trump. He's just capitalizing on it. And we had the former New Hampshire GOP chair on the show a week or two ago, who's against Trump. And yet he says, however, Republicans haven't been institutionally talking about problems with the Democratic voter fraud, which is complete and utter bunk. They have been, and they've been doing so in order to suppress the vote. And it's working. You'll be shocked to learn. We've been talking about big voter turnout, early voter turnout, early voting turnout in a number of states, which might translate into good news for Hillary Clinton. But there is also a great deal of suppression going on. As Insight US noticed, among the little shop of voter suppression horrors, North Carolina's Republican-controlled General Assembly and its governor, Pat McCrory, wove into the state's monster suppression law one trick that received less attention than most of the law's reduction in access to the polls, and that was specifically the state's early voting law. They had changed it from 17 days back in 2012 down to just 10 this year. Happily, however, that part of the law, as well as other parts of their voter suppression law in North Carolina, were struck down by an appellate court in July, finding that the restrictions targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. That's a quote from the appellate court when they struck down that law. But when they struck down that law, that means that the state's early voting system returned to what it was before it was struck down, which means that the counties get to decide how much early voting there will be. And the provision of the existing law said that at least one early voting site must be opened during the first week of the 17-day period. Well, a whole bunch of Republican-controlled counties discovered, well, if the law says at least one, that means only one can be open. So that's what they did. In 2016, the early voting plans in a whole bunch of counties across North Carolina, which is once again a battleground state this year. It went for Obama by just over a few thousand votes, maybe not even that much. Back in 2008, it went for Romney in 2012. So now a bunch of counties, 18 different counties in North Carolina, as Insight US reports, are strangling early voting to death. They cite Guilford County, which had cut its week one site numbers from 16 early voting sites in 2012 to just one this year. A whopping 94% cut in early voting in the first week of voting in North Carolina in Guilford County. They have reportedly here earned the dubious distinction of being the state's most successful voting super suppressor, posting just 3% of the number of ballots that its voters cast during the same interval in 2012. Just 3% of the number of voters who cast during the same period just 4 years ago. Now, a lot of Democrats and news media have been focusing on the big turnout, saying that this is going to be good potentially for Hillary Clinton. They're looking at the political side of it. I'm looking at the voting side of it. Just 3% of the number of voters who were able to vote in 2012 have so far been able to vote in Guilford County, and they are not alone. In Alamance County, just 10% of the 2012 totals have been able to vote so far in this year, in 2016. In Brunswick, it's 25%. Craven, 15%. Forsyth, 6%. You get the idea. This goes on and on. Henderson, 19%. Jackson, 19%. Johnston, 11%. Mecklenburg County, which is Charlotte, just 22% of the numbers we saw 4 years ago. And It is all perfectly legal. They did it all under the law. And those changes would have been probably blocked by the Voting Rights Act had it not been gutted by the Supreme Court back in 2013. They would have had to get approval for those kind of cuts. But nope, not anymore. And Republicans are taking advantage of it. So that's via early voting. That's just one example of how Republicans are keeping people from voting, the fight against the right to vote. Ari Berman, our friend over at The Nation, reports a troubling story today. Grace Bell Hardison, 100-year-old African-American woman in North Carolina, was told just a few weeks ago that her voter registration status was being challenged. That's right. This is something you can do by law, apparently, in
Anybody
North Carolina.
Can do.
Anybody can do, right. They have to have grounds to do it, so they invent grounds to do it. She was told, remember, 100-year-old African-American woman, she was told if she didn't appear at a county board of elections meeting or return a notarized form, she would be removed from the voting rolls. Hardison has lived in Belhaven, North Carolina, her entire life and voted regularly for the last 24 years, including in North Carolina's presidential primary in March of this year. The first thing that came out of her mouth when she saw this this letter was, "I can't vote." According to her her nephew, after she got this letter, she loves to vote. She will not miss election time. Hardison's registration was challenged by a guy named Shane Hubers, a Belhaven Republican, after a mailing done last year by a candidate for mayor. Mail that was returned as undeliverable by that mayoral candidate. If the mail came back as undeliverable in 2015, that became the basis for the challenge lists this year. But, as Berman reports, the mailings included many incorrect addresses. In this case, in the case of Hardison, she told a TV WNCT out there that she said, "My mail comes to the post office." She said, I have no mail come to the house. Ever since I've been here, my mail has been coming to the post office. So it doesn't go to her, it goes to the post office. It's not her address. The challenge list compiled by Republicans also overwhelmingly targeted Black and Democratic voters. Of the 138 challenged in this particular challenge, 92 of them were Black and registered Democrats. 28 were unaffiliated, 17 were Republicans, one was Libertarian. The North Carolina NAACP says this violates the National Voter Registration Act, which prohibits the mass removal of voters within 90 days prior to the election. And in their letter state Board of Elections, the North Carolina NAACP points out that Hardison's challenge is not an isolated one. The same thing is happening in other North Carolina counties. For example, in Moore County, one individual challenger, woman by the name of Carol Wielden, submitted forms challenging approximately 400 registered voters on the basis that first-class mail was sent to those individuals and had been returned to the sender. Wielden is the secretary of the Moore County Republican Party and has worked closely with the right-wing Voter Integrity Project, which has pushed discredited claims of voter fraud. And as Ari points out, the group recently accused Democrats of, quote, raping the retard vote.
Oh, my God.
Yep. So it is this sort of thing, these caging lists that got Republicans in a whole lot of trouble back in the early 80s in New Jersey when they had a similar what are called caging lists where they sent out letters and if they came back, they challenged voters. They put on armbands calling themselves a ballot security or ballot integrity
task force,
yeah. Right, and showed up around New Jersey during the governor's race and basically intimidated people from the polls. And this was challenged by Democrats at the time, and it resulted in a consent decree being signed, an order from the federal court, a consent decree being signed by the Republican Party that said they would not do that again. This was back in 1982, and they have been under this consent decree ever since, and they're hoping to get out of it next year. Now, why they would want to get out of it is unclear to me, because basically what it says is that they cannot target, based on things like race, they cannot target certain voters based on race. They cannot send out these caging letters in their so-called ballot security measures. Why they would want to be out from that, I don't know. It means, sounds like to me, they want to just basically break the law again. But they would like to be out of this. And next year, after all of these years, they will finally be out of this consent decree and I guess allowed to go, you know, restrict the vote, suppress the vote again for free. I don't know. That's what they're hoping, I guess. But now the Democrats have filed as of yesterday, just after we got off the air. The Democrats have filed a motion with the federal court saying that what we have seen in the course of this election from Donald Trump and from Republicans means that that consent decree should be extended for another 8 years. They were going to get out of this, the Republicans were, unless they had another instance of the Republican Party carrying out this sort of targeted fraud against minorities. And now the Democrats are saying they did exactly that. Reading from the motion that was filed here by Democrats last night, Defendant Republican National Committee violated the final consent decree, they argue, by supporting and enabling the efforts of the Republican candidate for President Donald J. Trump, as well as his campaign and advisors, to intimidate and discourage minority voters from voting in the 2016 election. Trump has falsely and repeatedly told his supporters that the November 8 election will be, quote, rigged based upon fabricated claims of voter fraud in, quote, certain areas or, quote, certain sections of key states. We've played that audio here before. Unsurprisingly, the Democrats write, certain areas are exclusively communities in which large minority voting populations reside. Notwithstanding that no evidence of such fraud actually exists, Trump has encouraged his supporters to do whatever it takes to stop it. Quote, you've got to get everybody out to go and watch. And when I say watch, you know what I'm talking about, right? And we pointed it out the day that he said that. That he was speaking in that code in order to sort of avoid this issues with this consent decree. Right. Trump has even encouraged his watchers to act like vigilante law enforcement officers, according to the Democrats' complaint. Now, the consent decree applies only to the Republican National Committee, the New Jersey Republicans, where this problem originally took place back in 1981, and their agents. So whoever could be considered their agents. And the Democrats are making the case here that Donald Trump is an agent of the Republican Party, that because they are working together on their ballot integrity issues. Trump has enjoyed the direct and tacit support of the RNC in its ballot security endeavors, including the RNC's collaboration on efforts to prevent this supposed rigging and voter fraud. In a rally in Denver in August, they say Trump's vice presidential running mate, Mike Pence, admitted that the RNC was directly coordinating with the Trump campaign on ballot integrity initiatives. He stated that, quote, the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee are working very, very closely with state governments and secretaries of state all over the country to ensure ballot integrity. And then just a few days ago, after the third presidential debate, they point out Trump's campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, told a reporter that the campaign was working to combat purported voter fraud by, quote, actively working with the National Committee, the official party, and campaign lawyers to monitor precincts around the country. The RNC has also been supporting Trump's effort to recruit poll watchers who are intended, Democrats say, to intimidate voters at polling places, and that violates the court's consent decree, which explicitly forbid the RNC from engaging in so-called ballot security measures directly, indirectly, or through its agents or employees. The Democratic National Committee, the plaintiff in this case, now respectfully moves for an order directing the RNC to show cause why they should not be held in civil contempt for violating the consent decree and why sanctions should not be issued as a result of these violations. So that was that's big. That's big news. And the Republicans have been trying to separate themselves from what Donald Trump has been saying and doing. They've been sending out letters to their state parties saying, don't do it. don't take the trap. But a lot of them are. A lot of them are working with this, you know, including where are we here? The Pennsylvania GOP led by Robert Gleason. He's also an RNC member, and he recently sued to allow poll watchers in Pennsylvania to monitor voting sites outside of their own precinct. That is currently prohibited by state law. In Michigan, the Republican Party chair is also an RNC member. She said last week that the party's attorneys were preparing, quote, a massive statewide anti-voter fraud effort. So that's what they're doing. They are making the case that this consent decree should be extended for another 8 years. They've got a pretty damn good case, it seems to me. We'll find out. We'll find out what the judge says. A new judge has now been assigned to the case because this has been around so long. The original judge has died.
Oh, my.
Yes. So there is a new federal judge who will be who will be looking into this. But that is rather big news. Now, the Republicans, for their part, they call the filing completely meritless, just as in all prior elections in which the consent decree was in effect. The RNC strictly abides by the consent decree and does not take part directly or indirectly in any efforts to prevent or remedy vote fraud. They said the RNC remains focused on getting out the vote. Well, they got a funny way to show it, don't they? So we will see. We will see what comes about there. But in the meantime,
just remember that you too can go out and help protect the voters at the polls. It helps to go check with your local club and get a training so that you know exactly what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do, so that you can help protect the folks, because they can show up at the precinct and challenge voters directly as they try to
in
vote.
In some states.
Find out what the law is in your state, but it is possible to go help.
Exactly. Helping people, there's going to be long lines. We know that's going to be happen again, particularly in these, you know, states where they're trying to make it harder to vote. But, you know, so helping people vote, bringing, you know, folding chairs,
water,
food. You can also sign up with your local party, be it Democratic or Republican, by the way, or Libertarian or Green, to be a poll watcher, a poll observer. But make sure you know what the laws are. You cannot be skulking around, intimidating people, challenging voters. Make sure you learn what the law is. I know we got to get to a break. Let me do this. One more story on problems that are that people are having voting, and Democrats in this case are trying to do something about it. Democratic U.S. lawmakers in Wisconsin have now sent a letter to the Department of Justice requesting that it deploy federal poll monitors to their state after local officials were providing potential voters with inaccurate information about the state's photo ID law. Now, a lot of states around the country where the Justice Department had sent monitors in the past to hundreds and hundreds of polling places, the Department of Justice is not sending them out this year, thanks to the gutting of the Voting Rights Act. And so now Democrats are begging the DOJ, please send out monitors. According to this letter signed by Senator Tammy Baldwin and Congress members Gwen Moore, Ron Kind, and Mark Pocan, national figures have suggested that there is widespread voter fraud in our country and have encouraged private citizens to monitor voting behaviors of certain communities for potential misconduct. And then they go on to cite the fact that the DMV has not been giving out the photo ID that they were required to give out by a federal judge. Back in July, that federal judge ruled that the system that Wisconsin's non-ID holders received free IDs to vote at the DMV had been a, quote, wretched failure. That judge ordered the state to do a better job of implementing the program and getting out these IDs. But months later, as Ari Berman, again at The Nation, reported, the DMVs were not giving out the certificate needed to vote. All you're supposed to do is walk in to a Wisconsin DMV if you can get there. Remember, these are people without driver's licenses. And you're supposed to get a certificate that will allow you to vote within 6 days. The Wisconsin Democrats write in their letter, given the flawed efforts thus far by state officials to properly implement this law with proof of demonstrably false information being disseminated to voters just days before the election, we fear that irreparable harm may result, particularly for voters of color who disproportionately bear the brunt of these policies and any election day intimidation efforts. They asked the DOJ to consider providing any resources or assistance it can in order to help our state navigate these unsettling circumstances, including poll monitors or any other election monitoring services that the agency could offer. 1 week to go, just a little bit over 1 week to go. I suspect we're going to be covering these stories more and more in the days ahead between now and Election Day. And we've got more tales from the world's greatest democracy right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. Yeah. I really love to watch them roll. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Watching the wheels go round and round year after year, election after election, the same stories unfortunately happening again and again. I'll get to this in a moment, but I keep meaning to point out 866-OUR-VOTE. Remember that phone number, 866-OUR-VOTE. If you have problems voting, if you see problems at the polling place, if you have even questions about things like photo ID and stuff that you cannot get answered, try calling 866-OUR-VOTE. You can also on Google, when it comes to the photo ID, voter ID stuff, you can go on Google and you can put in voter ID Texas, voter ID North Carolina, whatever your state is, voter ID Missouri, and you'll be given the laws for voter ID Wisconsin for your state. But call 866-OUR-VOTE if you have any questions. And don't forget, when you do have problems, not only call 866-OUR-VOTE, but also call your county clerk, or at least contact them in some fashion, as well as your Secretary of State. Contact folks in the media. Let folks know on social media. Report these problems that you have. You can send to me, bradcast@bradblog.com, if you like. I'll do my best to look into them, but the more people you let know about them, the better. We spoke a couple of days ago about Republicans in Texas who are freaking out about votes apparently flipping from Republican Trump votes to Democratic Clinton votes on their voting machines, on the touchscreen style voting machines they use down there in many counties in Texas. I say touchscreen style because those actually, many of them have a wheel made by Hart Inner Civic. So if you're watching the wheels go round and round down in Dallas, you might, because you're voting. In any event, the votes are reportedly flipping in a number of cases from Republican to Democratic down there. We've also seen reports this week of the same problems in North Carolina, except from Clinton to Trump in those cases. And now today in Georgia and in Illinois, we're seeing the same problem. In Georgia, they're flipping from Democrat to the Republican. In Illinois, they're reportedly flipping from Republican to Democrat. I spoke with a radio station earlier today in Chicago who was asking me about this, because you've got, again, Republicans freaking out about it, and for good reason. There is good reason. There is no reason we are still using these same stupid machines that do this every year, year after year, that keep flipping votes. I guess I have to keep talking about it until election officials get rid of these godforsaken machines, or at least until the American voters raise enough hell that you force them to, one way or another, hopefully peacefully. But in regard to this, to these Texas vote flipping reports, Trump has now seized on this and put out a tweet, quote, "A lot of call-ins about vote flipping at the voting booths in Texas. People are not happy. Big lines. What is going on?" Well, we know what's going on. A couple of things are going on. The machines that Republicans, by the way, have loved for years, these unverifiable, these 100% unverifiable touchscreen style machines, direct recording electronic machines that can never be verified. It doesn't matter what it shows you on your screen. If you see your vote flipping on the screen, it's probably not because it's being rigged. There's probably a malfunction with the machine because, well, at least if I was going to rig it, I wouldn't bother to show it to you on the screen. You would select whatever candidate you want, and I would record whatever candidate I want inside the machine, and no one would ever know the difference. So Trump tweeted out about the Texas issue, and he's right, frankly, to do so, to ask questions about that. That even as those reports from Georgia, I'll get to that in a second. But down in Texas, this was based initially a Randall County voter recalled her own, CNN reports it as her own mishap. While voting in a Facebook post on Monday that she had tried to cast a straight Republican ticket, including a vote for Trump and his running mate Mike Pence, but wound up inadvertently selecting the Democratic ticket of Clinton and Kane. So Shannon Lackey, the elections administrator at Randall County, said there is no reason for concern. Quote, absolutely not. It is not happening in any way, shape or form. Lackey told CNN today, I stand 100% behind what I do. I stand behind my machines and my staff. In other words, this is not happening. What these people are seeing, they're not actually seeing. Or if they are, it's their fault. The ballot complaints have surfaced elsewhere in Texas. Another woman in Arlington, Texas, had her Republican vote changed to Clinton, she says. That post on Facebook has been shared more than 200,000 times. Potter County, which borders Randall County, had similar problems reported. In each case, officials have attributed the problems to, wait for it, can you guess, Des?
Voter error?
Yes, exactly. Human error. Blame the voters.
Not the human error of the election officials. No,
it's the voters. There is nothing wrong with any of the machines we use for voting, Potter County Judge Nancy Tanner said in a statement. They do not flip your vote. They do not flip parties. Humans do that. And I guess she's trying to say that humans do it by voting wrong. It's their fault. It's their fault that year after year, election after election, these problems happen. It rocks confidence in the elections. And yet we continue to use the same goddamn machines and continue to blame the voters instead of the people who are insisting that we use these horrible voting machines, these touchscreen machines, instead of hand-counted or at least hand-marked paper ballots. Lackey, her name, yes, is Lackey from Randall County, said that she is confronted with such confusion most election cycles, and this year has been no exception.
Don't learn anything from that, God forbid.
Her personal hypothesis, and it's, mind you, just a hypothesis, is that voters who are so accustomed to touchscreens in their everyday lives hit the machine's button after indicating their choices and inadvertently deselect their preferred vote. I don't get that. People are so used to touchscreen systems
that they don't know how to use them?
That they don't know how to use them? That's what they're saying. Yeah. Someone else in Texas, Dallas County, Tony Pippins Poole, the election director in Dallas County, explained that the county's protocol for when voters complain about problems with machines is to cancel the ballot and recalibrate the machine. If they get a second complaint about the machine, then and only then do they take it out of service. She said five machines have so far been taken out of service. Maybe that's a way to return to paper ballots. Anybody who votes on a touchscreen machine, just complain. You can just make up, I guess, the fact that it's not accurately reflecting your vote, and eventually it'll get taken out of service, at least in Dallas County. Other counties leave them in there forever. Pippins Poole said that a lot of this has to do with she also blames the voter, other forms of voter error, such as when jewelry touches the screen. accidentally registering a vote.
Which is a great idea. Why not spend millions of dollars on a system that can be defaulted so easily with just an errant touch of your bracelet?
And that happens every year, every time. In Georgia, a voting machine in Bryan County was removed from service, according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, because it may have been, quote, flipping some voters' choices for president. Voter told the paper that it took three tries before his choice of Clinton was correctly recorded. Merle King, the executive director for Georgia's Center for Election Systems at Kennesaw State University in Georgia. They, along with Maryland, were the first states in the country to go fully to Diebold touchscreen voting systems back in 2002. And as I was told by someone who went to a conference at this, they've been a huge supporter. Kennesaw State University, the Georgia Center for Election Systems, and Merle King. They have been supporting these Diebold machines for years. They love them. They see no problem with them whatsoever. And I was told by someone who attended a conference there that one of the speakers had actually dropped down the browser window that they had up on the big screen, and there was Brad Blog in the browser window. Apparently, they're keeping an eye on what we say about their crap machines that they support and that they testify in favor of in court cases. In any event, Merle King, who's the executive director there, said it's a calibration error may be at fault. Other factors include whether voters have long fingernails, were wearing jewelry, had long sleeves, or were leaning on the machine. That could be responsible as well.
That's great.
Isn't that fantastic?
That's a wonderful product that they've spent all that money on.
That they spent all that money on and that they continue to support and blame the voters. And they wonder why, what was it, 44% of Americans in that poll I read at the top of the show, just 44% of Americans across the board, not just Republicans, 44%, only 44% are confident that their ballots, that their votes will be accurately accurately recorded. I wonder why. All right, a couple more points I got to get to before we get to our green news here. A lot of people not endorsing Hillary Clinton over the past day or two. Specifically, explicitly not endorsing Hillary Clinton. Here's how. The Yale Record, in its 144-year history, the Yale Record has never endorsed a Democratic candidate for president. In fact, we have never endorsed any candidate for president. This is, in part, due to our strong commitment to being a tax-exempt 501c3 organization, which mandates we are absolutely prohibited from directly or indirectly participating in or interviewing in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for elective public office. They go on to write, this year's presidential election is highly unusual, but ultimately no different. The Yale Record believes both candidates to be equally unendorsable due to our faithful compliance with the tax code. In particular, we do not endorse Hillary Clinton's exemplary leadership during 30 years in the public eye. We do not support her impressive commitment to serving and improving this country, a commitment to which she has dedicated her entire professional career. Because of unambiguous tax law, we do not encourage you to support the most qualified presidential candidate in modern American history. Nor do we encourage all citizens to shatter the glass ceiling once and for all by electing Senator Clinton on November 8th.
That's a nice non-endorsement there.
They are absolutely not endorsing her. The Yale Record has no opinion whatsoever on Dr. Jill Stein, it added, for some strange reason. I don't know. Rick Hassan over at the Election Law blog says that this would make a great final exam question. He's an election expert, a professor, election law professor at UC Irvine. And he writes at electionlawblog.com that this would make a great final exam question on express advocacy. Is that express advocacy or not? Because as a 501c3, as a nonpartisan tax-exempt organization,
Yeah. They're
not allowed to endorse anyone. And they unambiguously did not endorse the most qualified candidate, Hillary Clinton, shattering the glass ceiling and so forth. Very interesting question. Well, and it looks like someone else who has not endorsed Hillary Clinton was Bill Weld, the vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. He gave a long speech this week saying that this great nation, we don't have time to play it. I had wanted to play it, but I know we got to get out here. So I'll just read you a quick quote. This great nation has weathered policy differences throughout our history. We will do so again, but not in my lifetime has there been a candidate for president who actually makes me fear for the ultimate well-being of the country, a candidate who might, in fact, put at risk the solid foundation of America that allows us to endure even ill-advised policies and the normal ebb and flow of politics. In the final days of this very close race, every citizen must be aware of the power and responsibility of each individual vote. This is not the time to cast a jocular or feel-good vote for a man who you may have briefly found entertaining. Donald Trump should not, cannot, and must not be elected president of the United States, says Bill Weld, the vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian Party. In this speech, he mentioned Gary or Johnson only, I think it was three times. He mentioned Trump about eight times. It seems, as many people have interpreted his comments, that he is pretty much saying that the Libertarian candidacy is over, that Gary Johnson cannot win, and that people should consider voting for Hillary Clinton. He was pressed by reporters afterwards. Is that what he was saying? Are you endorsing Hillary Clinton? He wouldn't say it outright. But I guess, like the Yale record, he was in a place where he can't officially endorse the Democratic candidate, but he sure as hell seemed to be in his statement to the press. All right, we got to get out. We're back with Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your broadcast. Well, it's another one of those days when the Green News Report may provide one of the few smiles in our show. You were right, Des, at the top of the show.
Yeah.
That's about the brightest thing we have. I know you're keeping your eye on the Dakota Access Pipeline. We'll continue over the next few days to keep our eyes on those protests. But in the meantime, our latest Green News Report.
Use the language of promoting solar.
Leaked audio exposes utility company's deliberately deceptive anti-solar ballot initiative in Florida. Court rejects eminent domain for natural gas storage in Pennsylvania. New ruling allows future climate impacts to be used to protect species now. One weird trick that could drastically cut methane emissions from cows, plus...
It finally moves Volkswagen closer to closing this very ugly chapter on its history.
Massive settlement approved in Volkswagen's emissions cheating scandal.
All of that cheating and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
If you were hoping to hear a debate moderator ask about climate change, you have to wait another 4 years. And I suggest you do it on higher ground.
Heading uphill right now, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I don't know if it's in time to reach Florida voters or not, but I'm really hoping they find out about the scam that is Amendment 1 on the ballot this year.
Yep, that's right. Leaked audio has now exposed how the state's utility industry and fossil fuel groups backed by the Koch brothers are behind a deceptive constitutional amendment on Florida's November ballot. Amendment 1 is written with pro-solar language, but critics say it could actually crush the solar industry in the Sunshine State by allowing monopoly utilities to charge extra fees that penalize solar homeowners. Sam Nuzzo of the Koch brothers-funded James Madison Institute was caught on tape explaining how anti-solar groups deliberately confused voters on the ballot measure.
Remember this, solar polls very well. To the degree that we can use a little bit of political jujitsu and take what they're kind of hitting us on and use it to our benefit, use the language of promoting solar.
In an interview on the broadcast, David Pomerantz of the Energy and Policy Institute, which obtained the audio, warned that similar anti-solar policies are on the menu in every state.
There are absolutely efforts by the utilities in dozens of states to similarly attack solar, to attack people's right to go solar, to make it more expensive for consumers to go solar. And that's happening both in state legislatures and in public utility commissions around the country.
And these tapes show that these folks know exactly what they are doing. They are trying to confuse and deceive voters by pretending that they are in favor of rooftop solar because they know it's very popular. And so they're protecting their fossil fuel monopolies at these utility companies.
A federal judge has approved Volkswagen's nearly $15 billion settlement with federal regulators. The automaker admitted last year to using secret software on its diesel cars to cheat pollution and emissions rules since 2009. VW will give customers the option of buying back or repairing their cars and will contribute more than $2 billion to expanding electric car charging infrastructure and zero-emission vehicles. Volkswagen is still under criminal investigation for violating state and federal clean air laws. In Pennsylvania, the state Supreme Court has unanimously rejected a four-year-old state law granting natural gas companies free rein to use eminent domain to take private land for underground natural gas storage facilities. The justices ruled that vague claims of economic growth were not good enough for seizing private land for private profits with no direct benefit to Pennsylvanians. The justices also overturned another provision of that same law that barred doctors from talking with their patients about fracking pollution.
Oh, good Lord.
A victory for Arctic seals and potentially other species in the U.S. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has rejected a fossil fuel industry challenge to the federal government's designation of the Arctic bearded seal as threatened. The bearded seal requires Arctic sea ice for survival, but that's melting thanks to fossil fuel-induced global warming. The appeals court ruled that impacts of climate change in the future can be used to justify protecting threatened species today. That could impact future conservation cases around the country.
And that's good news.
That's a big good news.
How unlike you.
Finally, victory may be over cow farts. Australian researchers have...
That's more like you.
Australian researchers have discovered that adding a single specific type of red seaweed to animal feed could dramatically reduce methane emissions from cattle. In laboratory tests, that tiny amount of seaweed reduced methane in cow stomachs by up to 99%. Methane is a potent greenhouse gas, so if these results can be replicated and scaled up, that seaweed feed trick could be a major new tool to reduce emissions and slow climate change.
Red seaweed?
Yep.
Put it on your shopping list. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Now we can blame the cows. Now we can blame the cows. What a relief. I never did believe them scientists anyhow. Now we can blame the cows.
My thanks to Victoria Parks from our affiliate in Columbus, Ohio, WGRN 94.1 for that song. Love it. And Desi, you are a gas. My thanks to you, Desi Doyen, our producer, and to our listeners for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it for free as ever at bradblog.com. Drop me email if you like. I'm Bradcast at bradblog.com and find me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at TheBradBlog. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.